حضرت موسیٰ علیہ السلام had crossed over the sea, and Fir'aun and his people were drowned. So the Israelites, that is the people of Musa alayhi salam, had requested some type of code of law. That if you got a code of law, we'll have a direction and we'll have a manual, we will know exactly what is required of us. Musa alayhi salam was asked to come and spend some 30 days on the mountain Tur, and with the completion of the 30 days, Musa alayhi salam was asked to complete another 10 days. فَتَمَّ مِيقَاتُ رَبِّهِ أَرْبَعِينَ لَيْلًا. Hence, the time for meeting Allah Ta'ala and receiving the Torah had come after 40 days. So there's one, two things that we need to understand here. One is, Allah Ta'ala could have granted Musa alayhi salam the kitab in one instance. They requested it, Allah Ta'ala could have bestowed Musa alayhi salam in one instance, one go. But he asked him to observe and dedicate 30 days, i'tikaf, like i'tikaf. So in seclusion, in devotion to Allah Ta'ala, 30 days. Now, what was the need for him adding another 10 days to this 30 days? The reason is clear, that for the receiving of the Torah, a certain spiritual state was required. And that spiritual state wasn't yet received. So Musa alayhi salam was asked to spend another 10 days. Like how when you want to operate on a patient, then you want a certain condition. When you see that condition, then you say, alright, now I can operate. But a cataract, and the doctor will say you, no, the time is not ripe yet. Wait for another 2 months or 1 month, and then we will call you again. So a certain condition is required. So similarly, a spiritual condition has been required, and Musa alayhi salam had to observe that additional 10 days. Now there's two things here. One is that when we entask someone with any duty, with any obligation, then we give him the task in stages, slowly, gradually. So he can take it and it's manageable, it's easy. But we give it to him in one go, it becomes unbearable, he feels he won't be able to manage it. Number two is, the system of Allah Ta'ala is such that Allah Ta'ala likes work to be done gradually in stages. He doesn't want it to happen instantly. When the work has been done gradually, gracefully, then you think about it. Aage piche ki sochte hai. You think, what's going to be the repercussions? How is it going to work? If I make this move here, what's going to be the outcome? So you think about it from every angle, completely, holistically you think about it, and then you come up with the manual. You don't just jump onto a conclusion immediately. Okay? So these are all lessons for us to understand, that when we are doing something, that we don't do it, we don't jump onto it straight away. My mother, may Allah Ta'ala bless her, she used to have a friend, Chota Mota's first family. We used to call her Bari, she used to come to the home. So on the day of her marriage, this is Bari, Chota Mota's first family, on the day of her marriage, her elder brother, that is Mohammed Patel's brother, father at least, he advised his sister, that is Chota Mota's wife, that Ben, when you need to do anything, then think about it three times. Then you embark on any work. Don't just embark on any work immediately. When you need to say anything, then think about it three times. Don't just say things spontaneously. Don't just do things with impulse. Don't just say things with impulse and instantly. Rather, think about it carefully. Think immediately, what will be the immediate response? I got angry with the person and I called him a donkey, for example. So what is going to be the immediate response? Immediate response is that person will be hurt. If he's strong enough, he will retaliate. If he's strong enough, he will retaliate. In this primary school, the headmaster called me once. So I went up, the headmaster complained that this student in the madrasa, and he's being disrespectful to his madam. So the student was called. I asked the student, were you disrespectful to your teacher? So he says no. So the teacher said yes, no, he called me an ass, you know. So I asked the student what happened. He said no, she called me an ass. So I replied that we are both of the same species. So now the teacher had nothing to say. Both belong to the same species. Anyway, so what is going to be the immediate response? You tell the person donkey, whatever it is. You swear the person, you use some type of a vulgar language. And what is going to be the immediate response? That is the first thought. During the course of the week, one woman phoned up. She says, no, I seen my dream that I'm killing people and there's blood all around. He's got a shock of her life. Am I going to be convicted for murder? I'll be imprisoned, what? So I asked this woman what work she does. No, I'm in a marital problem and what. So I told him, Ben, don't get annoyed if I tell you something. So no, I'm here to listen. So I explained to her, perhaps you're engaging in gossiping. He says, yeah, this is exactly what's happening. Because I have a problem with my husband, and then everybody comes around and I tell them exactly what's happening, and the story just blows out of proportion. Obviously, I'm also going to speak, but there's going to be a little bit of exaggeration because of the bitterness and the hurt that I'm going through. So there's going to be a little bit of exaggeration, and the thing goes out of proportion. I'm insulting, I'm accusing, I'm imagining, I'm hallucinating, and I'm just leveling accusations against my husband. And as a result, the relationship has become even more bitter. So I think this is the problem. When you swear someone, you insult someone, it is like you're killing him. See? But you're not killing him physically, you're killing him mentally. And that's what you see, all the blood around, all the people that you're murdering around, this is it. Then I explained to this woman, see, when you're in this condition, what happens? A lot of people will sympathize with you. But that is just outward sympathy. They're sympathizing with you outwardly. Really, they want to know exactly what's going on. They want to entertain themselves with your tragedy, with your problem and difficulty. They want to get it. You know what happened after that? Hey, we're so sorry about you. How can you do such a thing? But really, what they want is some type of entertainment. And they can't find any other entertainment because now they're Muslims. They can't go and see Hindi films and all that to entertain themselves. So they will entertain themselves with your problem. Your problems become the entertainment. So the more you talk, there's more entertainment. So at the end of the day, what's happening? At the end of the day, the relationship between you and your husband is becoming more and more constrained. It's becoming more and more constrained. They are entertaining themselves about your problem. And people then eventually relate all these accusations at you level to him. He'll become more bitter towards you. You will be separated and they will be talking about it. So, have they contributed to your marriage in any way? So you forget all these people here. Don't entertain them. Don't give them your stories. You just see how you're going to repair your problem. You've got a problem now. How are you going to repair? How are you going to improve? You've already got a child from the husband now. And you're going to talk about him. Then you're going to break the relationship. Your child will become a delinquent. You'll be a single parent just now, all the ramifications, all the things that go with it. Can't you see beyond? So the first thing is that you think about the immediate consequence. Immediate consequence. I was explaining one friend of mine that in any problem that relates to public life, business life, public life, then it's not the right thing to include women into it. People use wrong type of reasonings. They say, well, in the Sulh of Hudaybiyah, in the peace treaty of Hudaybiyah, Ummah Salima radiallahu anha's suggestion was accepted. Because the Sahaba Kiram, when they were told to return back to Medina Munawara without entering Makkah Mukarrama, they were very, very traumatized that they are born and brought up in Makkah Mukarrama. Here they have come right till the gateway of Makkah and they asked to turn back. You know, they come in with the spirit of doing Umrah. They've been exiled. They have come with a huge group, over 1,000 people they have come. And now 1,000 people have to return. Like, you can imagine yourself, you come with two aeroplanes, 1,000, 2,000 people, all the difficulty, passport, visa controls, eventually you got there. And now they ask you, go back. It's not an easy thing, especially if you were in exile, you weren't allowed at all. And you just come at the airport, in fact, closer to the haram than the airport also. And then you're told to go back. When you got the strength, you got the muscle, you can flex your muscles. At that time, you are told to go back. What happens to you? So really, Sahaba Kiram were affected. Rasulullah is impressing upon them that you all need to go back. I am the Rasul of Allah Ta'ala. I know more than what you know. I know from Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala what you do not know. So listening to me is a blessing. But you can see the situation, the predicament. They are so worked up, so emotional, so sentimental about the whole thing. And they are the kuffar, the enemy of Allah Ta'ala. And we are the loyal persons to Allah Ta'ala. And we, after receiving the dignity and respect of being in the company of the Nabi, and then we are asked to turn away. Can you imagine what was the condition? What was the mental condition? Anyway, Hadh Ummah Salima radiallahu anha had given a suggestion. When she saw Rasulullah in the state, she had given a suggestion. Ya Rasulullah, what you do is you go and shave off your hair. And as soon as the Sahaba Kiram see you slaughtering your animal and shaving off your hair, they will just follow suit. Because they are so obsessed with your life, they will just definitely do it. And inshallah, things will work out after that. And Rasulullah replied that, and it worked out. So now they say, well, Ummah Salima radiallahu anha, she had given a suggestion, the respected family of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. She had given a suggestion, the suggestion was right, worked out. Right. Then, as Khadija radiallahu anha, Rasulullah's first encounter of wahi, and he was definitely, he is overawed with that encounter. Imagine now, up till now, he had no encounter with Nubuwat, with an angel, with Jibreel alayhi salam. And now he's seeing Jibreel Islam, an angel, first encounter. And then that encounter was so overawing. It was so overawing. And now Rasulullah is then tasked with Nubuwat, that from now right until the day of Qiyamah, you are going to be the Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. In fact, the Nubuwat of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is not just from the time, from his time. Ana kuntu nabiyan wa Adamu bain al ma'i wa teen. I was already declared a Nabi when Adam al Islam was still in his clay, in the mold he was. And I was already declared a Nabi. In other words, I am the Nabi of all times. I am the Nabi of all times. Although my Sharia and my way is not followed at every time, but I am the Nabi. I am the Nabi for all times, from the time of Adam al Islam. Before Adam al Islam, I was declared a Nabi. So I am the Nabi. My Nubuwat, it encovers all times. It encircles all times. It's not restricted just to my time. And then you see in the Laylatul Mi'raj, the night of Mi'raj, this featuring that Nabi Sosam is the Imam of all the Anbiya. Don't you see that? I am the Nabi of all the Anbiya. Adamu وَمَا دُونَهُ تَحْتَ لِوَائِ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ Adam alayhi salam and all the other Anbiya alayhi salam will be under my banner on the day of Qiyamah. Do you see that? So my nubuwwat extends over all time. It is not just confined to this period. It extends over all times. So now Rasulullah SAW is tasked with such a huge mission. This now, he had not understood, Rasulullah SAW had not realized that this was his personality, this was his greatness, this was his esteem. And now suddenly it dawned to him that this is his esteem, this is his honor, this is his position. He felt overawed, can I manage this duty? He's absolutely certain that I am a Nabi, like how you are certain that you are a man. You don't have any doubt. So the Nabi is even more convinced about his nubuwwat than you being convinced about your manhood. So there's no doubt about that. But can I manage this? I was a man of the public and suddenly I've been announced that you are this. So he was overawed. Khadija radiallahu anha, she comforted Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, telling him, Anta innaka latasilu al-rahim wa taksibu al-ma'doom wa tu'inu ala nawa'ib al-haq kalla la yukhzika Allahu abada. Allah Ta'ala will never forsake you. You are a man of such qualities. You look after people. The person who's out of a job, he doesn't have anything, you find something for him. You earn something for him. The person that is struck with any calamity, you try and help him out. وَتَقْرِدْ ضَيْفْ You look after and entertain guests. So you got all the good qualities. So such a person with such good characteristics and such good qualities, he is never forsaken by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But the suggestion is being given by Hazrat Khadija radiallahu anha. So now the woman liberation, they come up and say, see, Umm Salima had also given a suggestion. And suggestion came out right. Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha also made a suggestion and the suggestion worked out right. So can't we give a suggestion? Yeah, you not even fit to be the dust under the feet of Umm Salima radiallahu anha. You're not even fit to be the dust under the camel that Khadija radiallahu ta'ala may have ridden, right? Not even that. Why are you comparing yourself with Khadija and Umm Salima radiallahu ta'ala? So the better thing is not to include women in any problem outside related. Outside the home, that's not, it's out of your parameters. It's out of bounds for you. Don't you get into it. Most of the problems, whether it's business or otherwise, they become complicated because a woman is intruding into that. Now she's not meant for that. Psychologically, she's not meant for that. Physically, she's not meant for that. She's meant for the home. She will do a good job when you confine her just to her parameters, not beyond that. Beyond that, then there may be some exceptional woman. There may be some women that are exceptional to the rule. And they can find, like Khadija could do it. But she was such a mature woman. The hadith also bears testimony to her intelligence. Kamula min al-rijali kathir. There are many men who had come to the level of perfection, and very few women who had come to the level of perfection. Among them is Khadija and few other women. The hadith says it very clearly that she had reached that level of perfection. But now you can't find all women being so perfect. So the better thing is not to include them in these type of conferences, this type of meetings, this type of mashwaras, etc. Not to include them. They become too personal. Our partnership is going very well, and then a woman comes in, right? Now, the woman will obviously think about her husband. Hey, you know, my husband's rights, and how can I secure the rights of my husband? So she'll come to the defense straight away. Say, no, but you're doing all the work, all the dirty work you're doing, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you're getting such a raw deal you're getting. What are you working for? No, that thing, she keeps talking to the husband, it works the mind. When it works the mind, he becomes convinced that I'm doing all the dirty work, I'm doing everything, and I'm getting the raw deal. So then he stands up. Where he stood up from the wife. Understand? So the better thing is not to include them. That is why Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu says that shaviruhun wa khalifuhun, that you must consult women, but go against them. You consult them, but oppose them, go against them. Because in opposing them, فَإِنَّ فِي مُخَالَفَتِهِنَّ الْخَيْرُ وَالْبَرَكَةِ In going against them, there is khair, there is good, is barakat in that. There's barakat not in listening to them, in opposing them. In fact, where they speak about consultation, mashwara, etc., one of the adab they give there is a person who sits too much with woman. Woman means his own woman, his wife, perhaps his daughter, his sisters, his mothers, etc. But he sits too long for them. Then you should not be consulting with such a man, because he will be weak in his decisions. In his suggestions, he won't be firm. In his resolutions, he won't be firm. Because there's always this weakness. He's sitting with people that are weak, mentally weak, physically weak. They are weak. So he becomes weak. He's not so forward. He's not so courageous. He's not so firm in his decisions, in his suggestions. You sit with a class of people, then you become like this. They begin to give you all that type of sad stories, negativity, and you become convinced, no, you must go in that way. You must go in this way. Most people, they tell you, no, Mawlana, you do that wedding very simply. But what must we do with this woman? They'll eat our brains. A lot of people say, no, Mawlana, we ask them, why don't you do it simply? You know, you can do it 20,000, 30,000, you can round it up, or a little bit more, 50,000, and round it up, everything. Why? If we don't do it for the rest of our lives, we'll have to listen. Oh, kuch sunna padega. Yeah, only daughter. You're a miser. See? What do you think of yourself? Well, this girl is an orphan. You're just chasing out. You're happy that she will go out of the house. So the way she'll eat your brain and the way she'll chavi you, she'll kill you, that you'll have to spend that money. Now, after you spend that money, 2-3 million rand, who's going to pay the brunt? You're going to bear the brunt. Who's going to bear the brunt? You took out that 2 million, 3 million, and you busted up in that one wedding affair. In Dioban, there was one wedding. Nawab he used to really spend, you know. And he spent about 10, 15 million in his daughter's wedding. And people, they spur you up, they put you up to that point where you spend that money. So he spent that money. Qasim Nanuti Rahmatullah, he was very hurt. For the Muslim plight, he used to be very, very concerned. He liked to see Muslims progressing. But he saw this, he felt very disturbed. But now, how to go and advise this person in a proper way? So Mawlana went up to him and told him, Nawab sahab, mashallah, shabash, apne bahut hi bada karnama kar liya. What a great achievement, what a great achievement. 15 million you bust in just a matter of 1 week. Mashallah, what a wonderful thing. But Nawab sahab, I need to ask you one thing. That you spent 15 million, what did you buy for the 15 million? That what you bought for is a name, isn't it? Yeah, I bought a name for myself. But this name that you bought for yourself for 15 million, can you sell it in the marketplace tomorrow for 5 cents? You bought this for how much? For 15 million. Can you go and sell this in the marketplace for 5 cents? You know, I bought this reputation that I did this. Can you sell this for 5 cents? Why you waste your money? Why you waste your time? You could have used it better for you, for your children, for their children, for whatever else, some dini cause. You could have used it. But now this 1 week and you bust that whole money, kya faida hua? No faida for you, no faida for your children. Unfortunately, when there is no deen, there is no direction, really. When there is no deen, there is no direction. And people come here, they come and talk about going to hotels and all, right? And then just for a name, just to achieve a name. I went for that hotel one, two nights and we spent just 20-30,000 rand, just one night. 20,000 rand. What do you achieve? Hey, you know, I got a name for myself, I got a card that I spent one night in this hotel. What nonsense is this? What name? What is left in that name? You make a name for yourself when you passed on to Jannat. When you passed on to Jannat, then you have made a name for yourself. Before that, there's no name. Kya? Person is he's sitting in a 5-star hotel, flying around in jets, right? But he knows in 6 months' time, he's going to be executed. He's going to be killed, right? Is there any honor for that? Is there any respect for that? Does he feel good about it? So we don't know we're going to be executed in Jahannam or going towards Jannat. When we got that ticket is in our hand. And nobody can take it away from us. No, not Malakul Maut, nobody can take it. Allah Pak has given. So Allah Pak has given, nobody can take it. Right? When we got that and we crossed over to Jannat, then you can smile, celebrate. Then you can speak. Then over that celebration, forget that Dubai celebration, 250 million rand in one night. You can spend 10 trillion rands, it will be still less. If you got that. Yeah, they only spent 250 million. There you can spend even 10 trillion rands. On one night, on 1 hour you can spend it. It will be worth it. You got Jannah, you got everything. But wo na mila to kya mila? If you didn't get that, what did you get? What did you achieve? What have you achieved? What name? What does the name give you? So really, when we don't have deen, then our whole priorities, all, everything is mixed up, confused. Now, what will happen? And how do I do it? How do I make it work? But all this confusion, where does it come about? It comes about because we don't have deen. And when there's no deen, there's no direction. When there's no direction, then you are hitting a shot in the dark, taking a shot in the dark. Oh, this will come right. This may come right. It's a shot in the dark. Does it come right? Are you sure that it will come right? Are you certain? Are you clear about it? You are clear about it. You don't know anything until it's not on. You don't know. And the only thing that is absolutely confirmed, there is no doubt about, is deen. Everything else in this life, it's unpredictable. Which side you're going? Tomorrow, what will be your condition? You don't know. You're a young person, 30 years of age, fit and sound, everything good in him. Overnight, he's sick. In his sleep, he dies. Night, something happened. In his sleep, he's dead, finished. 30 years. Fit, nothing, no problem. Don't hear about these type of stories. So in this life, nothing, absolutely nothing is predictable. You can't predict it. Everything is unpredictable. The only thing that is certain is deen. Even dunya, Allah Pak says, Man kana yuridu harsa dunya nu'tihi minha. And liman nasha. You intend this world, we'll give you how much you want, and we'll give to who we want. We'll give how much we want, and how much we want we will give. وَمَنْ كَانَ يُرِيدُ حَرْثَ الْآخِرَةِ نَزِدْ لَهُ فِي حَرْثِهِ. But as far as the effort of the hereafter, Allah Ta'ala says, we won't really give you according to your effort, but we will double it, treble it, 10 times we'll multiply it. That's the minimum, we'll multiply it 10 times. That is a confirmed thing. This is unpredictable. You may get it, you may not get it. It may work out for some person, it may not work out for the other person. That's different takdeer. And how you work out this takdeer masla? Look, take two people with equal intelligence, born around the same times, offered equal opportunities. Everything equal, identical. Intelligent, equal. Opportunities, identical. Right? But you will see, when they are going on a footing, right? They're going and opening and starting their lives, you will find there's a chalk and cheese difference between the two. Whereas the money was the same, intelligence was the same, opportunities were the same. But then why is there a difference? He's taken a totally different route, he's taken a different route. He's made something for himself, he's made nothing for himself. Doesn't this happen? It happens all the time. It happens all the time. Don't we see these things happening? So this is what we call takdeer. Takdeer has destined something for him. Takdeer has destined something for that person. You be happy with your takdeer. He is happy with his takdeer. That you cannot predict. So the only thing that is absolutely certain in this life is deen. Other than that, there's nothing that you can predict. So when that is the thing that is most certain, absolutely clear, then the righteous thing, the correct thing, the intelligent thing is to hold firm to it. Many people, you know, when this apartheid was being scrapped and the new government was coming in, 1994 something, and people were coming around, what to do and where to move. You know, Australia is a good haven and America is a nice place for us. So a lot of this type of talks, so I gave them two suggestions. One is, I told them, see, in most of the European world, you will find a lot of saman, but iman will be in khatra. Right? You'll find a lot of wealth, but your iman you will be jeopardizing. Right? You see the halakots happening in America, Australia, here. There's a lot of wealth, a lot of affluence. But iman is definitely not secure in these type of lands. Right? You got a daughter, now you must take her to school, high school, whatever it is. And then she's in school, then she can't wear a scarf. And then, if she gets interested into another boy, white, black, yellow, green, whatever it is, or he gets interested, and something goes on, you can't do anything, you can't control their lives. You can't say Muslim, you can't ask her to remain upon Islam and marry a person of your choice. You can't do it. She can immediately report you to the police, and then you are, nothing left for you. You no choice in the matter. They can be given their freedom straight away. They taken up and they gone. You lost their faith. You lost no control over them. That's the age that they are most vulnerable. They can't think for themselves, and at that time they have got that freedom. Do as you please. You choose what you want. So you may get the saman, but iman is definitely in danger. Here, there may be the danger of your jaan. The jaan, your life, may be in danger, right? But your iman is more safe in this place, in this environment. There is more reasons for your iman to be more safe. You got already an infrastructure of Islam, madrasas, maktabs, tabligh jamaat. And what you want to do Islamically, you're doing with absolute freedom, unrestricted, uncontrolled. What have an istimaya, you have it. You want to do some dini work here, you do it. Tabligh, istima, madrasa, maktab, jamiat, anything you want to do on the dini line, there's no restriction. You can do it freely. So show me where you can do these type of things in the entire world. Forget these world, these countries, even the Arab world, show me where you can have istimas openly like how you have it here. How you can have jamiats and all that, and madrasas and maktabs uncontrolled and checked by the government. If you want to have a madrasa, whatever it is, it's controlled by the government. The government will chalk out that syllabus, and they will teach you through a television screen, whatever it is. And that is the type of deen that they will push before you, the deen that they will agree with. The government will agree with, and the government approves. Here you got unrestricted, uncontrolled, undetected. Everything is clear, free. Can you see your iman is safe here? No, there may be the danger. What's going to happen? In my understanding, if someone has done it purely for the sake of Allah, in fact, some of my friends, they did come and ask. I suggested to them, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, I suggested that keep your iman and your deen as a priority, and you'll find everything working around that. You just keep your iman and your deen as a priority, work around that. Right? I don't say we don't have to work for dunya, we have to work for it. Right? But you keep your iman and your deen as a priority, right? And you'll find everything will work and prosper, everything will progress after that. But if you keep your dunya as a priority, then nor the dunya will come in your hands, nor will deen come in your hands. Both you will lose out. But you keep your iman, your deen, etc. as a priority, and you work. Then you work after that. You'll find Allah will open the ways for you. وَمَنْ يُحَاجِرْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ يَجِدْ فِي الْأَرْضِ مُرَاغَمًا كَثِيرًا وَسَعًا. For the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you doing this, you will find a lot of expansion. You will find a lot of opportunities. You will find coming for you. Keep your mind clear. Keep your heart clear. And you will find Allah ta'ala will open up opportunities for you. Keep your niyat right. The Jamaat people speak commonly about the people of Zambia and around the 80s when they had a situation coming up. Indians were being threatened for their wealth, for their position, for their possession, whatever it is, they were being threatened. So they contacted Hazrat Inamul Hasan Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, Allah Ta'ala fill his grave with Noor. So all Mawlana suggested to them, by apne irade, apne niyat ko sahi kar lo. Just correct your intention. They corrected the intention, they made Toba for the wrong intention. We have come here basically to make money. Now they turned the intention, they corrected, they rectified the intention. Overnight the government's heart turned in their favor. Can you see who's the control of the heart? Now this is something that happened in our lifetime, we see it happening. Where the government was against them, take them out, throw them out, the obstacle in the path of progress. They're only thinking for themselves, they're not thinking for the country, for the broader advantage of the country and the people here. They're not thinking, they're only thinking for themselves. They made tawbah sincerely to Allah Ta'ala, corrected their niyat, and Allah Ta'ala changed things for them. So Allah Ta'ala is not only in Zambia, na'uzubillah. He is everywhere. He is not only in Zambia, he's not only in any restricted to any country, any situation. He's everywhere. All we need to do is make tawbah, correct our intentions and work accordingly. Who is stopping us from worldly progress? Who is stopping us from technology? Who is stopping? Nobody is stopping. But keep your priorities. So what I was getting at was that suggestion, that advice. When you're saying something, you're embarking on anything, then think three times. what is going to be the immediate outcome? I'm going to say this, I'm going to do this, but what's going to be the immediate result? How will the person take it? I explained just now that either the person is stronger, then he'll retaliate, right? If he retaliates, you're not sound, you're not fit, you're not sound, you're not safe, right? Imagine also an emergency, you call someone something and he gave it to you, even verbally gave it to you, but what an embarrassment. Isn't it a disgrace? Also an emergency, you use one, two vulgar words against some musalli and he gave it to you for everybody. Now, your child is there, your friends are there, your brother is there. And even if it is that you gave it to him, but you have brought an embarrassment for yourself. Boy, you made a clown of yourself. From everybody, you lost yourself. See? You lost your sanity, you lost your calmness. From the whole crowd, you lost your respect. So whether that person gave it to you or you gave it to him, but the fact that it happened in the crowd, you have lost your self-esteem, you have lost your self-respect. Both ways you lost all. You see. So what is going to be the immediate outcome? When you say someone something, what is going to be the immediate outcome? Right? Number two, what is going to be the short-term outcome? Say, today, this is the immediate. Short-term, after a week or 2 weeks, what's going to be the outcome? Now, the outcome is that, now you saw that person, he's coming from one direction in the masjid, you're coming from another direction, you don't want to see him, he doesn't want to see you. Or conveniently, you'll just take a turn to the wuzu khana, to the toilet. Doesn't it happen? You'll see the person and conveniently you'll just find a friend, oh, bye, how are you? And you'll start off a conversation here, avoiding that person. Does it happen or doesn't it happen? It happens. He saw you, but he avoided you and he went and spoke to that person. Does it happen? So now you can't face the person, he can't face you. You're finding it difficult to talk to him, he's finding it difficult to talk to you. Why? Because you could not control your tongue. You could not control your tongue and you lost a friend. You could just have restrained yourself, held back your tongue, and you wouldn't have lost a friend. Now you're going to the masjid, and you find it difficult. Now, but I think I need to read my namaz at home, because if I'm going to go to the masjid, I'll meet this person here. I'm talking of realities. Slips of the tongue. Youngster came and told me, youngster about 22 years of age, now, I don't go to the masjid because of so-and-so person. We had a problem, so I don't feel like going to the masjid. I read my namaz at home. Or I go to another far away masjid, I won't go to this masjid. But where it started from? Slip of the tongue. Okay. One thing we should definitely remember, we do things how much we can manage. Allah says, وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ لَا نُكَلِّفُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسْعَهَا. Believers who do righteous works, Allah Pak is telling them, La nukallifu nafsan illa wusa. Jannat is not a difficult thing. Why? Because we only burden a soul according to its capacity. So jannat isn't a difficult thing. You can perform your namaz standing, do it standing. Can't do it standing, do it sitting. You can't do it sitting, do it lying. So the fact that Allah Ta'ala doesn't burden a soul more than its capacity shows that the deen is easy. The way into jannat is very, very simple, basic. It's not a difficult one. So when you're working and talking to friends and committees, etc., then why do we take on burdens and obligations that we can't manage? What we can manage easily, we do it. What we can't manage, we can't do it. Whether it's an obligation from a committee, whether it's a wife that is putting on burdens upon us, or whether it's whoever, how much we can manage, we will do. Not beyond that. Why should we take on more than what we can manage? You know, when you see people's problems these days, it's generally because of them taking on stress and taking on burdens more than they can manage. You got such a capacity, do work according to your capacity. Allah has created people with different levels of capacity. Rasulullah once advised said Abu Zar Ghifari radiallahu ta'ala anhu, Inni la'ara fika dhafan, I see there's a weakness in you. فَلَا تَتَّوَلَّيَنَّ, you must never become, never assume a position over even yatims, 2-3 yatims also, 2-3 people, don't assume a position over them, because I see a weakness in you. Right? You see, he's got a different capacity. By the same token, Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu, He has been told by Rasulullah SAW, Usman, you will be made to wear a garment. So of your own accord, don't remove that garment. And that interpreted as khilafat. Right? Rasulullah SAW was telling you, you're going to get khilafat. Otherwise, don't reject this. And then don't forsake this. No matter how you are besieged. It's a lengthy incident of Usman Ghani Adiyan. And at the time, the siege was laid around his house. His respected wife was with him, Naila radiyallahu anha, and he was reciting the Quran Sharif, and there was a siege laid. So the Sahaba Kiram insisted on Usman Ghani radiyallahu anhu, you give us the permission and we'll take all these, we'll kill these rebels and move them out. So Usman Ghani radiyallahu anhu gave two replies in essence. One answer was this, that I don't want to be a person that's going to initiate murder in the Ummah of Rasulullah SAW. Because these people that are rebelling, they are Muslims, right? They are kafirs, they are Muslims. They are rebelling. I am going to give instruction that they must be killed. So who initiated the killing of Muslims? Though I was rightful in the killing, right? They are after my life. I am rightful in killing them, right? Self-defense. And the Amir, they need to respect and honor. If they are rebelling, they are mubahuddam. The blood can be taken. I can kill them. I am rightful for that. But I don't initiate this process. Because for the rest of time, it will be documented in history, in Islamic history, that Usman Ghani, na'uzubillah, he was the first person to initiate the killing of Muslims. Only be documented in Islamic history. It will be documented in Islamic history that he is the first person. So why must I get that bad name? You see that? Why must I get that name? That I initiated the killing of Muslims. No one was justified for it. That's a separate issue. But why must I have that bad name against myself? And the second thing is, Usman Ghani says, that I had seen Rasulullah SAW in my dream. I had seen Rasulullah SAW in my dream, perhaps the previous night. And Rasulullah SAW is telling me, O Usman, they have laid a siege around your home. Yes. Usman, and they have prevented you from the essentials, water, basic things they have prevented you from. So yes. And Rasulullah then gave me some container of water. I drank that water. And up to this time, I find that coolness within myself, within my entire body. You know, on a hot day, and someone gives you water, the coolness, the refreshment that you feel. I still feel the refreshment and the goodness within myself. And the third thing that Rasulullah had suggested to me, O Usman, if you want, I will make dua. And all these rebels will be repulsed. And on the contrary, if you want, then you come and join us for iftar. So who's going to give that? Who's going to leave that opportunity? Who's going to leave that opportunity? Is anybody? Come and join me for iftar. See? For the whole, the kingdom of the entire world, if someone is suggested or given that opportunity by Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Usman, come and join me for iftar. Who's going to give up that opportunity? So for that I can't ignore that. They can kill me, it's alright. They can kill me, they can murder me, it's alright. But this thing here, I can't give it up. And he was reciting the Quran Sharif. And the entrance was blocked. So they couldn't get entry. Ali radiallahu had instructed his sons, Hassan and Hussein radiallahu, they blocked that entry on the entrance. So the rebels had gone in from the opposite end, they climbed up the roof, and they got inside. Usman Ghani radiallahu was reciting the Quran Sharif, and his blood had dropped upon those verses of the Quran, فَسِيَكْ فِيكَهُمُ اللَّهِ Allah Ta'ala will suffice you. And up till now, the Quran is preserved, where the blood stains are already still there. Blood stain is still there, residing from the Quran Sharif. So what I was getting at is, you know, the short term. What is going to be on the short term? It will be a distasteful experience. People will be talking against you. And you will feel miserable within yourself. Why did I have to open my tongue? Why did I have to use these words? Could I have just controlled my tongue? I wouldn't have lost my esteem, my respect. My morale wouldn't have been destroyed. Now I feel lousy and miserable within myself, within the circle of my friends. People are talking against me. You see the short term. Now the long term problem, right? The long term problem is, the world is such that Allah Ta'ala has designed the world that we are interdependent. We are dependent on each other. Right? We are dependent on each other. I am building a home. I need 3-4 pockets of cement. Urgently I need it. The whole job is on hold. And he is the only hardware in the whole town. Now how do I go to him? I had a fight with him the previous day. And he is the only hardware in the whole town. The next hardware is 200 kilometers away. What do I do? What are my options now? See? How do I get it from him? You see, you will definitely need the next person. Allah has designed the world such that you will need someone. Sooner or later, you will need the person. But now how to confront him, how to speak to him, how to talk to him, because I had a fight with him just now. So you think about the immediate effects. You think about the short-term effect. You think about the long-term effect. Now if you open your mouth, now if you translate the intentions of yours into actions, inshallah, there is very, very less cause for you to have any remorse. Very, very seldom you will have any cause for remorse because you have thought about it very, very carefully. In fact, your friends will have a greater liking for you. But this is a mature thinker. He talks with maturity. He talks with experience. He talks holistically. He sees a problem holistically. He doesn't just look at it from one angle and goes on to it. He doesn't embark onto a problem immediately. He thinks about it carefully, rationalizes very well. He's a very mature thinker. Alhamdulillah, we appreciate his company. So they will have a soft spot for you. They will think good about you. You will feel good within yourself. You will feel in your namaz, etc. You will feel motivated. What? Just the tongue and the care, the caution that you need to exercise of the tongue. On the contrary, you will have a fight with anybody. Even just a debate. Just a little bit of hard words. And then go and perform your namaz. No devotion. Your devotion, your dedication, everything has been snatched down. No matter however you can appear yourself, now you're doing for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Whatever you are doing, but you went into a debate, you went to a fight, you went and had a quarrel, even if it was just verbal, but your dedication in namaz is gone. You're looking at one kitab, that thing is gone. You're listening and attending a lecture, that thing is gone. You can't pay attention. So for the day, for the night, you are really miserable. You feel restless. You feel restless. Your sleep is gone. So what have you earned? You haven't earned anything. See this abuse and improper use of the tongue and where it leads you to. Hadith says it so clearly. Man sakata naja. Man sakata naja. Whoever remains silent, Allah Ta'ala takes him through all hurdles. He takes him through. Are you gone? Man sakata, just your tongue. I mean, why is it that the Sharia has emphasized so much about the tongue? In the time of fitna, then amlik alayka lisanak. Look after your tongue. Time of fitna. Now. You can see now it's fitna, and everybody has got his own line of thinking. So what's the right thing, what's the correct thing for you to do? Keep quiet. Remain silent. The moment you open your mouth there, you're gone. Now you have to support the statements that you made. You made a claim. You made a statement, you need to support it, you need to defend it. But you remain silent, there is no grievance against you. But the moment you open your tongue, you're gone, finished. It's something that you can't reverse. It's like an arrow. You shot it out, you can't reverse the thing. Same, when you shot you pierce the person's heart, now you can't reverse the thing. You can't reverse the situation. For as long as he lives, he'll feel, this is what this person thinks about me. You see that? The damage of the tongue, A person may have hurt you, he may have hurt you physically, but he can cover up, always he can cover up. So, I slapped you, I did the wrong thing, I was misinformed, and perhaps after a day, 2 days, a month or 2 months, you'll forget about it. But verbal abuse, you can't forget it. Surprising people, they don't know how to conduct themselves in the presence of their wives. What words, what languages they use in the presence of their wives. Yesterday there was a case, sort of, it's sad to say this, but the husband was using this type of words, perhaps that your parents made a mistake, they picked up the wrong baby from the hospital. Now, that child, although it was said in jest, but what goes to that girl's mind? She feels sleepless, she feels insecure. Hey, now, am I really the right child of my mother? Or did they really make a mistake? What happened? We can't trust these government hospitals and all. You don't know what they're doing. You know? This type of unnecessary suspicions go in your mind. It works on you. Psychologically, it works on you. Almar Thami Sarabhanda says, I'm going to show you how these things work. You know, how it affects a person psychologically. Well, I wasn't feeling well at all, you know. So, he told his one khadim, in those days, they would take the urine to the hakim. The hakim will check the urine and he will tell you the problem, whatever it is. So the hakim asked for the, they call it karur. A karur is a bottle where they put in the urine. So the khadim took the urine to the hakim. So hakim checked it, examined it very carefully. He said, how is this man alive? It's shocking that this man is alive. He's supposed to be dead. How is he alive? Anyway, this khadim came back to Mawla. And Mawla asked him, what did the hakim say? So he reported exactly what the hakim had to say. The hakim is saying that how is this man alive? He's supposed to be dead a long time ago. Anari kahi ke, stupid man. You're not supposed to relate such a thing to me. You're not supposed to be relating such a thing to me. Because you will break my morale. My spirit will be broken down. Now, Hazrat Abbas, how was I repaid? Now, what you do? You take that karur again, you take that urine again, and go right to the hakim's surgery. Right, go to his surgery and come back, and you must tell me, or the hakim himself says, now everything is right, until that you on your way to recovery. Well, but it's a lie that. So I know it's a lie, but psychologically it will have a different effect. Psychologically, it will have a different effect. Now he went right to the hakim's surgery and he brought it. So Mawla, the hakim sahab says everything is right and you don't have to worry. You're on the way, on the road to recovery. And Mawla felt better after that. Mawla did feel better. So you see these small, small comments, small, small remarks. We don't think much about it. But how it affects a person. I know my personal self, one student was studying around the time we were studying, you know. So he liked me a little bit more than the rest of us. So he played a joke with us. He says, you know that meat that they get me from that butcher? You see all the dogs that are hanging around near the butcher? They slaughter some of the dogs and just push into the meat. Now he played a trick so that there's more meat on his chair, on his plate, you see. He played a trick. But I remember for about 5 or 6 months, I couldn't eat that meat. I couldn't eat that thing. I know it was a joke. I know it was told in jest. But how it affected me personally. You see, how your body responds. Psychologically also, how your body responds. One message, something is conveyed to you. And how your whole body, how it responds to it. How important it is. Not to make this type of comments. I was surprised. Person, how can you make this type of comment? To his wife, how can you make such a comment? You can't make this type of comments. One person tells his wife, you know, if I had another chance, never you again. Why do you make this type of statements? How can you make this type of statements? Or you don't like whatever it is. But if you want to keep her, imsakun bi ma'rufin, keep her with dignity, with respect. You see this use of the tongue, how evil, how dirty, and how you can hurt the person. You give all the wealth, but the person is distraught, he's painful, in his sleep, in his wakeful state, they're doing work. They're carrying on with you, they're smiling, and they're cheering with you. But within them, they're getting eaten up. I'm telling of reality is what people come and tell me. The marital problems and what they tell their wives and all that. I think to myself, what level of stupidity? How can they do such a thing? You know, it's something beyond my imagination that people can do such a thing. But how it affects the next person? It affects the person. His whole morale is broken down. The feeling of security is broken down. They don't want to respond. They don't want to cooperate. But why? Misuse of the tongue. I mean, there must be some reason why Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had to warn us. In the lengthy hadith of Mu'adh bin Jabal radiallahu anhu, that the sawm, fasting, is a shield, right? Namaz is a pillar of deen. It keeps the entire deen together, right? And with that, zirwatu sanamihi al-jihadu fi sabillah, the highest thing is jihad. But Allah adulluka ala milaki dhalika kulli, must assure you something that will preserve your entire deen. Your entire deen will be preserved. Must assure you something that will preserve your entire deen, will keep it together, will bond it. You know, cement how it bonds everything together. So must assure something that will bond your entire deen. Look after your tongue. As Muaz is surprised, the tongue and the preservation of the tongue, and it will bond the entire deen. So Nabi tells him, tumara nas ho jaye, what's gone wrong with you? Don't you know, telling you my own words, that many people will be thrown into Jahannam, will be thrown headlong into Jahannam just on account of the misuse of the tongue. You mentioned those words, you said something, but how it hurt the person, how he took it negatively, and how it hurt him, you disregarded it. No, I tell the haq as I want, I won't say. No, but you say the haq, you say the truth, but there is a way, there is an approach. Islam doesn't say you must be wild and go and hurt the person and damage. Yes, it says that you must say the truth, but it didn't say you to go and hurt the person and kill the person. The truth, ilm is a blessing, right? Ilm is a blessing, right? And that when it's a blessing, it's like a seed. You know, ilm is a seed, right? So for the seed to be productive, we need soft soil. Soft soil. If there is soft soil, then the seed is going to be productive. You're going to see a nice tree coming up out of it, right? But it's a hard soil. It's hard soil, it's rock, it's stone and all that, and you want to plant seeds there. Is it going to work out? So you need to soften the person. Soften the person. Make him understand. See? Open his heart. Now you plant your seeds of wisdom and education. Now it will sprout out all. Everything will sprout out of that land. You see, speech, tongue, and this three-level plan. You know, there's a three-level plan. Immediate, short-term, and long-term. In all matters that you do. One more time, Sahib says that most of the wrongs that we do, sins that we commit, is because of us not thinking and not reflecting. If you only think and reflect, you know, deeply, correctly, positively, constructively, then 75-80% of the gunas will go away. 75%, 80% of the guna will go out of our lives. But because we fail to think correctly, you'll find these problems. Now, just for a moment, just think to yourself, right? You admired that girl, right? Now, what is the immediate response in you? Now you want to go closer to that girl, right? You want to be closer to her. That's an immediate response. Right? Then the second level is you're going to do something else. And the third level, you'll commit the ultimate, right? But now you're looking at that guna from one respect, one aspect. You're not looking at it from a long term. This is why I'm just admiring finish. But then when you fall into that work of zina, see, and you become an embarrassment, a talk of the town, a disgrace for your own people, for your wife and your children, for everybody around, see, then you realize, hey, yes, I only thought about it, this three-point plan. I could have just thought about it, you know, the disgrace it will bring, the embarrassment it will bring. My own wife and my children, they will lose confidence in me. They won't have the type of respect for me any longer. See? And I won't have involved myself in this. But because I was impulsive, I thought about it and immediately I wanted to do it. Therefore, I brought this disgrace, I brought this embarrassment, I brought this type of insult upon myself. You see how important it is to think. Our ulama kiram explained that what is the difference between a man and the rest of the animals? What is the difference? Someone say, no, man, the main difference is man can speak. But that difference is not such an important thing. Because other animals can communicate. They do communicate. Don't you see a chicken and the hen, right? If there's a danger, it will send a signal. It will sound something as a signal, and all the chicken will come under its wings. Don't you see that? So there is a language of communication, though we do not understand it. So Allah explained that the main difference between man and every other creation is that Allah Ta'ala has granted that man that level to think constructively, think forward, think ahead. Not just for the moment, it thinks far beyond. Man can think right to the hereafter. آخرت میں کیا ہوگا, قیامت میں کیا ہوگا, خدا کے سامنے ہمارا کیا حشر ہوگا. یو تھنک اباؤٹ آل دیز تھنگس بفور یو امبارک آن اینی تھنگ. سو دیٹ از دا بلیسنگ اینڈ دیٹس دا آؤٹ اسٹینڈنگ فیچر دیٹ مین ہیز گاٹ اوور ادر اینیملز ٹو تھنک, ٹو انڈرسٹینڈ, ٹو ریشنلائز, ٹو ریزن. افلا تعقلون, افلا تتدبرون, وائی ڈونٹ وی ڈونٹ ریزن. قرآن شریف سیز اٹ, وائی ڈونٹ وی یوز اوور ریزننگ, وائی ڈونٹ وی یوز اوور انڈرسٹینڈنگ, وائی ڈونٹ وی ریفلیکٹ. The Quran Sharif emphasizes so much about this reflecting, understanding. La ayatil li ulil albab, for the people of intelligence. All these signs that we see around us, they are for the people of intelligence. People of intelligence. People of intelligence, who is that person that is intelligent? Who is the person that is intelligent? The person that is intelligent, let us understand it in this way, right? If there's a good picture, you know, a beautiful picture, so there's a whole host of ants and they're admiring the picture. So one ant says, hey, you know, what a beautiful picture. The second ant says, no, man. It's not the beauty of the picture that brought the beauty, it is the beauty of the brush. It is the goodness of the brush that has brought about this beauty. The third ant, that thing gives its suggestion, what the brush can do. It is the fingers that was holding the brush. It is the perfection, the goodness of the fingers that was holding the brush that brought about this beauty. And the fourth ant, that is the most intelligent of all, the fourth ant says, no, it's not the picture itself, it's not the brush, it's not the paint, it's not the fingers, rather it is the mind that could invent such a beautiful picture, could construct such a beautiful picture and then translate it into a beautiful scenery. It was that mind and that heart that made this whole thing work out. So now you will say that fourth ant is the most intelligent. Why? Because it could lead the information correctly. You know, when a person is able to lead that information right to the beginning point, right to the root, you would say he is the most intelligent person. He brought it right to the root. He brought it right to the root. You are getting something, so for 50 rands, right? So the next person says, no, you are getting for too much. I know, let me just check out where it's got from. He gets another contact, now 30 rands. The third person comes, no, I'll find it. And he sources it out. He goes right to the root. He goes right to China and he goes to the manufacturer and he picks it up for 10 rands. Hey, now, he is the intelligent person, right? Don't you say that he is the intelligent person? He could see, source the whole thing out. He will go right to the root. So you say that is the person that is intelligent. Similar in the matters of the hereafter, the person that can go right to the root, why are we out here, where are we going to, where are we starting from, where are we heading towards, you can go right to the root, you say that's the person that is most intelligent. Otherwise, others are just on the surface. They haven't discovered this whole thing. And when they haven't discovered it, they just feel it's a pastime, it's an entertainment, must gather some wealth, enjoy ourselves, pastime, and then we die. إِنْ هِيَ إِلَّا حَيَاتُنَا الدُّنْيَا نَمُوتُ وَنَحْيَا وَمَا يُهْلِكُنَا إِلَّا الدَّهْرَ. It is just a pastime, a little bit of enjoyment, living and dying. Every time, in every era of human history, you found someone is dying, someone is living, someone is born, someone is dying. This carries on, this is life now. You must enjoy yourself, carry on. You can't just stick. Can't just think about this type of problems and get stuck into the problem. No, we to continue with our lives. See, so these people have got the surface level. The person that is thinking further, he sees, oh, but why did Allah Ta'ala design this entire thing? This whole thing, where is it leading towards? You know, you say, where is leading? Man is going from one level to the other. This article, this commodity, where it was got from, he gets to the second person gets to the third person. And eventually he gets to the root. He says, no, that person is the most intelligent. So in the same manner, that person could lead the information right to the source, right to the root. You will say he is the most intelligent. You will say that he is the most intelligent. But now, what will bring you to that level of intelligence? What will bring you to that level of intelligence? الَّذِينَ يَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. They ponder. They think, they reflect. They don't take things They don't just take things for granted. They don't just see things on the surface and just leave it there. But they reflect beyond their noses, beyond what their eyes can meet. They think beyond on it, where this came from, how it started from, and where is it ending to, what is the purpose of this design of Allah Ta'ala, where does Allah Ta'ala want to take us from here. So he thinks about it holistically, completely looks at it. When you look at that thing completely, the immediate thing that you will find within you is you will find fulfillment. You won't find a void. You won't find a void. And if you don't look at it completely, you will find a void. Oh, no, I thought, farming is a real, it's a real thrilling thing, you know. It's a thing that I'm looking forward to, and I went to farming. And I made a killing of it. I made a lot of money. And I'm very, very well known for my expertise in farming and agriculture, what have you. People come to me and they contact me. But then after some time, you'll find still there is a void in you. There is a void in you. There is something that is missing out. There is something that is missing. What is that thing that is missing? You know, Allah has designed this world, right? There is a fulfillment for every need, right? For your eyes, visible things will bring about a fulfillment. Yes, you need to listen to some good voice, Quran Sharif, etc. It will bring you some fulfillment, right? Nose, some good smells, ether, perfume, etc. It will bring you some type of fulfillment, right? Tongue, some good food, good taste, varieties, right? It will bring you some fulfillment. Now, all that said and done, right? The mind, it needs a little bit of thinking, jogging itself, trying to create certain things, right? So that's now the mind fills the fulfillment. So everybody found their fulfillment. But the heart, what will bring the fulfillment of the heart? Everybody, every organ has got a way to find its fulfillment. To get away, to do away with that void. You know, you talk of a void, you don't find the fulfillment in life. So everything has got something for its fulfillment. Now the heart, where will it find its fulfillment? Like the tongue, can it find its fulfillment in music? Can't find its fulfillment in music, right? The eyes, can it find its fulfillment in ether? You don't find it. And the ether, the nose, will it find its fulfillment in food? You won't find it. Or perhaps the smell of it. But the nose, will it find its fulfillment, for example, in music? You don't find its fulfillment. Won't find it. Whatever has been created, Allah Ta'ala has created something for its fulfillment. So now you understood the fulfillment of the eye, the void of the eye, the void of the nose, the void of the tongue, the void and the vacuum of the ear. You heard about, you understood, and you understand how to find the fulfillment. But this heart, that is the nucleus, right? Where will it find its fulfillment? Where will it find the completion of that void? That vacuum that is within that heart, where will find it? Where will it find it? So Allah Pak says very, very clearly, Allah Pak says, Allah bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub. With so much of emphasis, Allah, behold, listen carefully. Now, our Creator who designed us and made us, He created that vacuum within us. He created that void within us. And what He's announcing, what He's telling us, Allah, right? And then he starts off the sentence, the starts of the verse, Bidhikrillah. Taqdeemu ma haqquhu at-ta'khir. The grammatical order, what he's showing, that there is a reason for this structure, for structuring it in this manner. Allah has got a reason to show greater emphasis, to impress upon you. Yufidul hasr, what? Taqdeemu ma haqquhu at-ta'khir, yufidul hasr. It's impressing upon us. It's emphasizing upon us. One word of emphasis is Allah, behold. And the second word of emphasis, look at the grammatical nature of this verse. Right? That's greater emphasis. What's supposed to be coming at the end, it's coming at the beginning. You know? Like how I say, I ask you for help. Right? That's one way of expression, right? That's one expression. But I just reverse the whole thing and I say, you do I ask for help? Can you see the difference? You do I ask for help? One is, I ask you for help. And I restructure the whole thing and I say, you do I ask for help? Do you see the emphasis? Do you see the impression I'm impressing upon you? So the same exactly happens here. What is supposed to be at the end, I brought it at the beginning. Why have I done that? To show emphasis. So there's a double emphasis. Ala bi dhikrillah. Ala bi dhikrillah tatma'innul qulub. That if you want that void to be completed, you want that fulfillment of that heart, you want that fulfillment of the soul, you're not finding it anywhere. You tried 101 things, and you want that fulfillment, then it is in the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. It is in the remembrance of Allah. You have to, in other words, you have to plunge, you have to dive into it. Not just zikrullah, but you have to dive into it. Your heart is in zikr, your tongue is in zikr, your mind is in zikr, your love and your spirit is in zikr, is in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When that happens, then you'll find a fulfillment. Now I can see there's a fulfillment. There's a cause, there's a direction in my life. I can see there's some path for me. I'm not groping in the dark. I'm not just shooting in the dark. No, there's a fulfillment. There is something I can find. There's a fulfillment. There's an answer for what I'm doing. And if you don't find that, you will definitely feel, definitely there's a vacuum. I don't find the fulfillment. I don't find that type of completion in my heart. I feel there's something that's missing out. And you go going home, you don't find the fulfillment with the wife. You're going to the business, you don't find that fulfillment. You're reading a kitab, you don't find the fulfillment. In nothing do you find the fulfillment. So Allah Pak is telling you very clearly, I'm telling you with double emphasis, Allah, bi zikrillah. You engage in the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. And a simple way for most of us, for many of us, is the simple tasbihah that they give. 100 times durood sharif, 100 times istighfar, 100 times the third kalima. But remember, do the zikr, dedicate yourself, devote yourself to the zikr. You're writing your books, you're writing a letter to a friend. Can you just write the letter, driving the car, and you're writing the letter? Can you do it? You can't. You're doing your books, accounts and all that. Can you drive the car and just tell the accountant, let's do this? No. You will need to put your mind and your soul to it. That how much I can save. How much I can save. This year, for the tax law and all that, and they give an allowance for damages, etc., pilferage and damage and all that, and I need to see that I take the maximum. If they're getting 20%, I must take 20% pilferage, and what have you, I must take the maximum. How can I save myself? So you put your heart and your soul to it. So similarly is the state of zikr, that you put your heart and your mind. No, I need to do that zikr with a total mind engaged in Allah Ta'ala. Then my mind mustn't be in anything else. My heart mustn't be in anything else. It must be in zikr. I can't be just going for gush, making zikr. No. I need to give the time to Allah Ta'ala. Like I can't go for gush and do my book at the same time. I will do my book. I will do it. I will do it properly. I will do it thoroughly. I will do it correctly. So similarly is the state of zikr. And similarly is the state of the recitation of the Quran Sharif. You think to yourself, you ponder for the 2 minutes, 1 minute before recitation of the Quran. Allah Ta'ala has requested me to recite the Quran. I am reciting it to him. My best friend or honorable person, if a king was here, King Abdullah was here, right? Or the Imam Sudais or someone was here, and he asked me to recite the Quran Sharif. And how would I recite? I would do my best. Won't I do it? I'll do the best. I'll try. And the last tajweed that I learned by my ustad, my khari sahab, I will do that. I will recite it correctly. Won't I do that? So similarly you think to yourself, Allah Ta'ala has asked me to recite. And I'm reciting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then how must I recite? You will see as you recite 3 rukus, 2 rukus, 4 rukus, then your concentration will go low. And you stop for 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Again you ask yourself, Allah Ta'ala has asked me to recite. I'm reciting to him. Allah Ta'ala is reciting. Allah Ta'ala is asking me to recite and I'm reciting to him. And now with that frame of mind, then you can even higher the level of concentration. You can higher the level of concentration. Now you can higher the level of concentration this way, that this Quran Sharif is the word of Allah Ta'ala. The Quran Sharif is the word of Allah Ta'ala. So really it's Allah Ta'ala that's reciting. And I'm listening with all respect and honor, and Allah Ta'ala is reciting. And I am listening to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with what awe, with what magnificence, with what type of concentration will you then conduct yourself? Allah ta'ala is reciting. Allah ta'ala is his kalam and he's reciting, and I am listening to it. So with what awe, one bird woman was making tawaf of the Kaaba Sharif. I want to show you, someone puts his heart and mind to it, and how his heart will be inspired, how his heart will be affected. He's making tawaf of the Kaaba Sharif, and one person is reciting the Quran Sharif. وَفِي السَّمَاءِ رِزْقُكُمْ وَمَا تُوْعَدُونَ. Your rosy is in the skies, in the heavens. In other words, it's decreed day, the Lord Mahfuz. That birdman says, well, there's no need for me to work. The person of the skies, of the heavens, he's taken it on himself to provide rosy, then why must I work? You see that yaqeen, the magnificence, the type of conviction that he's listening to the Quran Sharif, and how it impacts on the heart. Allah, the Tawfiq Nasib.